Okay, when revising the code words, very important, guys, that you also make use of the written notes that I gave you, particularly the handouts, the printouts of the code word, and that'll cover your key facts. These revision audio notes are really as a guide to revision, a reminder, and they'll help deepen your knowledge a little bit as to what's going on. The Cold War breaks out after World War II because there are two world systems left. There's democracy and capitalism, and there's communism. Fascism under Hitler has been destroyed, and this version of government's gone. So you've got two big systems left. And it's important to realize just how much the Second World War devastated the societies, particularly Russian society. 60 million people had died worldwide, but Russia had carried the brunt of the Second World War. Something close to 23 million Russians had died. If you could imagine going through Britain today and seeing 1 in 3 people die, so 1 in 3 towns in Great Britain being empty, that gives you an idea of the devastation that was caused in Russia. So Stalin, who was in charge of Russia, obviously didn't want that happening again. Over on the other side of the Atlantic, you have America, who hasn't really suffered as much as Russia, hasn't come anywhere close to that massive industrial capacity, but hasn't really committed just as many troops per head of population as Russia have. And America's a democracy, as is Britain. And whereas Stalin can tell his armies what they can and cannot do, Churchill and Roosevelt, and after them Clement Attlee and Truman, they have to be elected in, and soldiers get a vote, and so they don't have as much control over the army as they would like. So as the Second World War winds down, Stalin keeps his huge army because the Russian people want to be protected, and because Stalin wants to have control, and because this huge army is just about the only thing that Russia has going for it compared to the rest of the world. Whereas the American and the British armies go home. Now, what America has, and very soon Britain will have, that the Russians won't get quite as quickly as the nuclear bomb, as the atom bomb. And that's the great equaliser. American air power combined with the atom bomb means that Stalin doesn't want to annoy the Americans too much. Now, Clement Attlee, who became the British Prime Minister after Churchill, said that the only thing that the Russians needed to get to the English Channel was boots. There were so many Russian soldiers that the British Army and the American Army couldn't have stopped them because the British and the Americans were demobilizing. They were sending men home. But what the Americans and the British did have were very powerful air forces with the capacity to drop atom bombs on cities. And the Russian people had suffered so much, there was no way they would have tolerated another war. Even Stalin's dictatorship could not have told the Russian people, right, you're going to go to war again. There would have been uprisings, so Stalin wasn't prepared to go to war again. What Stalin was prepared to do was to take over the nations of Eastern Europe and use them as a buffer between Germany and Russia. You have to remember, in the 1940s, the big issue is Germany. What do we do with Germany? Because Germany has created two world wars. It's created World War One and World War Two, and we do not want these wars happening again. So all the great powers in the world are worried about Germany. What do we do with Germany? So February 1945, Churchill, Roosevelt and Stalin, here, the big three, meet at Yalta in Russia to discuss what's going to happen at the end of the Second World War. And by February 1945, it's only a matter of time. Hitler's going to lose. And what they agreed is that they would divide Germany into four zones. Now, Russia would take one half of Germany, and then America, Britain and France would take the other half between them. So America, Britain and France would have one half of Germany, and that's going to become West Germany, and Russia's going to take the East. It was agreed that Germany was going to pay reparations. Germany was going to have to pay the Allies for the damage that it had caused. There would be a United Nations set up, and this United Nations would be stronger than the League of Nations that had happened after the First World War. America was going to back this United Nations. It was agreed that the USSR would declare war on Japan 3 months after Germany's surrender. An extraordinary agreement is put together over Poland. And what is literally suggested here is that Poland's borders are going to move about over 100 miles, about 100 miles. What they're going to do is Russia is going to take some land off Poland, but to make up for that, they're going to give the Polish people some land in Germany. The Polish people were given some German land. So basically, Poland's borders effectively move something like 100 miles to the west. They literally move the entire country. It's extraordinary. But this is the deal they came to in Poland. But the big agreement, and this is the big one, Eastern Europe is going to come under Soviet influence. Now, it was agreed that there would be democratic elections in all those countries. That was part of the agreement at Yalta. But Russia was going to have control over Eastern Europe. You know, this was not going to be a place that America and Britain were going to poke their noses into. What went on in Eastern Europe was going to be seen very much as Russia's, under Russia's control, because Russia had been invaded. Russia had suffered horribly under the German invasion. Now, again, a few months later, they meet at Potsdam. So you have those two conferences, you've the YP, Yalta, and Potsdam. And at Potsdam, there have been changes. The war in Europe is over. Hitler's dead. Soviet soldiers are all over Eastern Europe. Now, that means that the Soviets control Eastern Europe. You've got to remember how odd this is. Britain goes to war to protect Poland from being taken over by German dictators. And it ends the war with Poland being taken over by Russian dictators. Czechoslovakia as well, which was taken over by German dictators, is now taken over by Russian dictators. And this causes some unease. It's going to lead Winston Churchill to make a very famous speech that you're going to hear about in a few minutes. But it ends oddly. You've got Russian soldiers all over these Eastern European countries. The US troops were beginning to return home already. Plans were already in place. Truman has replaced Roosevelt, and Labour's Clement Attlee has replaced Winston Churchill as the British Prime Minister. And there was agreement made that there was how Germany was going to be divided, how Austria would be divided, the reparations that each power would take from their own zone. The only power that really goes to town and strips German factories down and moves huge amounts of wealth out of Germany is Russia. The other powers aren't as keen to punish Germany. And the reason that they're not so keen to punish Germany, there's two reasons. One is they need a good German economy to produce coal, to produce steel, to get businesses up and running again. The second reason is we need Germany on our side to protect us against Russia. Because in the Western mind now, it's fear of Russia that takes over. What if the Russians with this huge army keep coming? Well, there's Germany, and Germany's had a very good army in the Second World War. Okay, it's only the western half of Germany. But if the Germans were able to get back on their feet, they could protect us from the Russians. They could be a barrier between us and Russia. So we wouldn't just be relying on the atom bomb. So America and Britain and France aren't quite as keen on stripping the Germans of all their wealth. The Russians just came in and took over whatever they liked. Well, we mentioned about these Russian troops being all over Eastern Europe. And so in 1946, in a place called Fulton in Missouri in America, Winston Churchill made a very famous speech called the Iron Curtain speech. And he said there was an iron curtain descending all over across Eastern Europe. And the idea was that Stalin was building an iron wall down through Europe. And he was keeping everything behind this curtain under his control. The Americans weren't too taken with this speech. It didn't really make big headlines in America. Made big headlines in Britain, even though Churchill was not Prime Minister anymore. But somebody who was particularly annoyed by it was Joseph Stalin. And Joseph Stalin was extraordinarily annoyed because he said, listen, we've got the right to build this curtain. We've got the right to protect ourselves. Russia has suffered more than anybody else during the Second World War. And so, yes, we will exercise our influence in Eastern Europe so that Russia never suffers that again. And, of course, the Russian people are behind Stalin on this. So this buffer zone is created between Germany and Russia. And the Germans want to, and the Russians want to make sure that Germany is never reunited again, and especially that Germany is not reunited under Western control. They might tolerate a united Germany again if it's going to be under Russian control, but they definitely don't want a united Germany that's allied with the West in any way. They just see this as that this would just start another war, and they want to protect themselves between that. 1945, 1947, the Russians take over Albania, Bulgaria, Hungary, Poland, Romania. And they do that by setting up communist parties. And their method of taking over these countries is brutally similar in each case. They would go in and set up what you call a coalition government. They would go in and say, okay, the communists are going to be part of a government with other people. So we'll have Democrats in with us and conservatives, and we'll have all the different parties, and we'll all get together and we'll form a government. Just one little thing. The communists are going to keep control of the police, and the communists are going to keep control of the media. You don't mind, do you? And the countries went along with this because there were so many Russian soldiers over their country, they didn't have much of a choice. But what this meant is it gave the Russians control over the security of a country, and that meant that election time, because the police are controlled by the communists, the police can persecute people who aren't communist. And so only the communists are going to win these elections. And they can bully and intimidate anybody who opposes them. And this happens in country after country after country in Eastern Europe. And also by controlling the media, the only message that gets out to people is the communist message. Now, they also had an interest in taking over education as well. That was more of a long-term goal, though. In the short term, they want communist takeovers. Now, the interesting thing is, even though they tended to control the media, even though they had control of the schools, even though they had Russian soldiers all over the country, the communists were never powerful enough to take over by an election in any Eastern European country. They always needed the police to destroy their enemies, to take these countries over. And so in some sense, Churchill's Iron Curtain speech is true. You're seeing dictatorship after dictatorship being set up in Eastern Europe. Yugoslavia was the one country that turned communist that wouldn't listen to Russia. It just wouldn't follow Russia's path. And because of that, if there was going to be a Russian invasion of another country in Europe, it was not going to be Germany. They weren't going to march towards France or Britain. It would have been Yugoslavia. And this just shows that the key issue for Stalin isn't communism, it's will you do what I tell you to do, when I tell you to do it. And because the guy in charge of Yugoslavia, Tito, wanted to go his own way, well, Stalin put a huge amount of pressure on him and eventually fell out with him. And at several stages it began to look as if Stalin would almost have contemplated invading Yugoslavia. And America and Britain eventually began to support Yugoslavia to some extent because of its opposition to Russia. Well, March 1947, this is about a year after the Iron Curtain speech, the British government announces that it can no longer help fight communists in Greece. The Greeks had been trying to keep the communists out of control. There was a strong communist movement in Greece that had fought the Germans. The Germans had been defeated, and now it was trying to take over the country. Now, the Russians didn't particularly want this communist movement to win. It was the Yugoslavians, actually, who were supporting it, the Yugoslavian communists. Stalin wasn't too fussed about Greece, didn't want another war there, didn't want to get into conflict with Britain, and he'd done a deal with Churchill saying that Britain could have Greece, but the communists were still there. And even without a lot of Russian support, the communists were giving the British trouble. And the British in 1947 had to say to the world, listen, we cannot financially afford to fight the Greek communists. And then there was a worry because Turkey was getting a communist movement. Turkey's right next door to Greece. Now, if the Greek communists win, then the Turkish communists might win. And then if they win, then you're starting to look at communism going into the Middle East. And if communism gets into the Middle East, all that lovely oil can no longer go to America. And so the Americans don't want to see communism spreading from Greece to Turkey to the Middle East. And so they need to do something. So President Truman goes to Congress and he says, look, we need to do something to stop the spread of communism. And he comes up with something that's called the Truman Doctrine. Doctrine just means teaching or idea. And the Truman Doctrine is this. We will use, America will use military or economic means to stop countries falling to communism. We'll use our money and our military to stop a country falling to communism. Now, round about the same time, the Russians are coming up with a similar idea, and that's this. We will use whatever means we can to help any country get rid of colonialism. In other words, to kick the Europeans out of Asia and Africa, they would help any country do that. But America's plan comes under the Truman Doctrine. And the Truman Doctrine, again, is we will use our military and our money to stop any country turning communist. And Congress agreed to give $400 million, which is a huge amount in those days, to help end the war in Greece and to help Europe recover, because Europe was devastated. I mean, there were towns that were completely destroyed by bombing. There was nearly 1 million tons of explosives dropped during World War II. A lot of it fell on Europe, and a lot of industrial centres were completely destroyed. Europe needed to be completely rebuilt. So the idea was that America would send this money into Europe. Europe would use the money to rebuild its factories. And then when things got moving again, this would help America, because a rich Europe would be buying goods from America. So the money would sort of go in a little bit of a cycle. You know, the money would go into Europe. Europe would rebuild and then use the money they were making to buy goods back from America. This wasn't just an act of charity on America's part at all. It was a good business move. Then we come to something called the Marshall Plan. And that's when General George Marshall visited Europe. He was the U.S. Secretary of State. In Britain, that would have been called the Foreign Secretary. But it was the Secretary of State's job in America is to deal with other nations, is to strike deals with other nations. Now, George Marshall had been the chief ally general in World War II. And he had travelled to Europe when he was given the Secretary of State's job after World War II, and he had seen the devastation, he had seen how poor Europe was, and he basically came back to America and said, if we don't do something fast, the entire continent is going to fall to communism, because people will do anything to get rid of this poverty. And there was a strong communist movement in Italy, there was a strong communist movement in France. Now, these were just people who were looking to win elections. They weren't blowing up bases. There were no shooting wars in France. There were no real shooting wars in Italy. But communism was growing because people wanted rid of poverty. And so Marshall says, listen, we need to do something so that these people do not become Russia's allies. They do not become communist. And so the Congress eventually agreed to release a huge amount of money. Eventually, they would release over $13.3 billion over 4 years into something that's called the Economic Recovery Program, ERP, E-R-P, Economic Recovery Program. And 16 countries would benefit from Marshall Aid. Czechoslovakia wanted it. Stalin said, no, you're not getting it. And what happened very quickly in Czechoslovakia is that the communist enemies were stamped out by Stalin. One man known as Jan Masaryk disappeared out a window, and nobody knows to this day, was it suicide or was he murdered by communist agents? But there was a communist takeover in Czechoslovakia, and that communist takeover really got America moving and said, right, we really need to get this money into Europe and get lots of it in and get it in there quickly. And so America began then this program of spending huge amounts of money in Europe. Now, the extraordinary thing here is that America didn't put any conditions on this. They basically said, if you want our money, ask for it. So Russia could have asked for Marshall Aid. But Stalin seen this for what it was. He basically said this is dollar diplomacy. In other words, you're buying support, you're bribing countries. And he forbid Eastern European countries from taking Marshall Aid, and certainly would have had none of it himself. Because what America was really trying to show the world is, listen, you can't do this on your own. You need capitalism, you need our method of business, you need American factories to rebuild. And Stalin was trying to say, no, you need communism to rebuild. There could be no middle path. You had to choose. You couldn't have both. And so Stalin forbid many countries from taking aid from America. Stalin actually set up something called the CIB, which is the Communist Information Bureau, or sometimes called Cominform, and that was basically to make sure the communist countries did what they were told. And then there was the Council for Mutual Economic Assistance, or Comecon, and that was the Soviet version of the Marshall Plan. Now, what it really focused on was building huge factories. And up into the 50s and the 1950s, it actually did begin to look as if communism was working in Eastern Europe, because Hungary, Albania, Romania, these countries had never had huge industries before. And Stalin was creating huge factories to create steel and to produce coal. And, you know, there's all this building going on. And it looked as if communism was bringing progress to these countries. By the time you started getting into the 60s, the 70s, these countries had grown for a while, and then they become poorer and poorer and poorer again. Compared to the West, communism could only bring a measure of growth by getting people organized. It was very good at getting people organized, and it was very good at factories and building lots and lots of things. But then when it came to the day-to-day running of the economy, the running superstores and making sure people have enough toothpaste and enough clothes and all the little things that we take for granted, communism was useless at it, because it tried to control everything from the centre. Instead of letting a shop manager in your local Tesco's or your local Sainsbury's look at what people were buying and deciding what he was going to order in each week, a guy sitting in Moscow, hundreds of miles away, would decide what the typical superstore would have and would decide what needs to be made in each factory. It's called central planning. And he would send that amount out to every shopping centre in the area, whether people wanted to buy it or not. And so you would run out of goods that people did want to buy, and you'd have too many goods that people weren't interested in. You know, people would run out of bread, but find out that there was too much toothpaste in the factory. Nobody wanted it. And this was part of the problem with communism. It was useless at the day-to-day running of the economy. Very good at making factories to make lots of cars, lots of tanks. But not everybody needs a tank. Not everybody needs a fighter plane. And there's only so many cars to go around. And it was just useless at this sort of thing. The time we get into the 1940s, late 1940s, 1948, Stalin's got a good grip in Eastern Europe, but Germany is a problem. The Americans and the British and the French are starting to create something called a Bizonia, and it looks like they're going to create a Western Germany. So basically went from three zones to two, Bizonia, and they were starting to introduce their own currency there. And it did not look as if the Russians and the British, it did not look to Russia like the British or the Americans were having any plans to leave. Because they weren't planning to leave. And the Americans and the British were then going to introduce a new currency, a new type of money called the Deutschmark, into the three Western zones. And what that would have meant is those three Western zones, the French zone, the British zone, and the American zone, were going to become one unit, West Germany. And at that, Stalin panics, because what he sees now is one big German power, and it's going to be controlled by Britain and America. It's going to be allied to Britain and America. And the Germans are growing again. And the Germans are going to be powerful again. And there could be a German army. And this was going to cause a problem for Russia. This could be a threat, a force that could invade Russia. And so what he decided to do was, right, I'm going to try and force the British and the Americans out of Germany altogether. And he reminded them Look, you said at Yalta and Potsdam that Germany would be reunited, but neutral. In other words, Germany would be reunited. There'd be one Germany again, but it wouldn't be allied to America, and it wouldn't be allied to Russia, and it wouldn't be allowed to have an army. That's what you said was going to happen. To which Britain and America and France reminded Russia, yes, but you said there would be free democratic elections all across Eastern Europe. And guess what? You lied. So we're not going to take you on our word. We know exactly what will happen if we leave West Germany. You will move in, you will take over, and we'll have one big communist Germany, and we don't want that either. Stalin doesn't want a war because he knows he can't win it. His people won't back him. Atom bombs would be used. So he doesn't want a war, but he needs to get the British and the Americans out of Germany. So what can he do? Well, he looks at the map and he looks at the city of Berlin. Now, Berlin is well inside Eastern Germany. It's well inside territory controlled by the Russians. But the interesting thing about Berlin is because it used to be the German capital during the Second World War, there's a Russian zone, a British zone, and an American zone, and a French zone. So Stalin says, well, what I'll do is I'll close all the roads and all the railways into Berlin, and I'll starve the British and the Americans out of Berlin. And when they have to abandon Berlin, then the Germans will begin to think, well, they lose faith in them, will begin to realise that the British and the Americans will run at the first sign of trouble, and that'll be my way of beginning to force them out of Germany. So 1948, he closes the roads and the railways into West Berlin, where the Allies are. So here you've got the Allies, 2 million people in West Berlin, and they are surrounded by communists. Well, what can you do? Well, the Americans decided to fly in all the food that the people of West Berlin needed. And this was a massive effort. Now, this is the Berlin Airlift. Now, please be very careful. This is not the same as the Berlin Wall Crisis. The Berlin Wall Crisis does not happen until the 1960s. This is only 1948. This is the Berlin Airlift. There is no Berlin Wall at this stage. There's nothing like a Berlin Wall at this stage. But what the British and the Americans do is they fly in hundreds of planes. 13,000 tons of supplies were flown in every day. 13,000 tons a day. 2 million tons in total. And by mid-1949, Stalin had to give in. He couldn't keep this blockade going, and the blockade was lifted. Because the Allies were completely humiliating him. During World War II, a large German army had moved to the city of Stalingrad. And it had become surrounded by Russian troops. So the Germans are moving well inside Russian territory. And this is 1942. And they come to the city of Stalingrad. But the Russians spring a trap and they surround it. And so there are several hundred thousand men surrounded by Russian troops. So roughly 200,000 men. And Hermann Göring, who was the head of the German Air Force, said to Hitler, it's okay, we can resupply them by air. We can use our airplanes. And it was a disaster. 200,000 men began to starve and had to surrender. The Germans could not resupply that army. But here are 2 million Germans in West Berlin, and they're being supplied with 13,000 tons a day by Britain and America. In other words, they're saying, look at what the Germans did to you, but you defeated them. Now look what we can do with our power. We can do something far greater than the Germans ever achieved. We can use our planes to supply an entire city that you have surrounded. And we're not even breaking a sweat. Look at the amount of food that we can supply. Look at the amount of goods that we can supply. So eventually Stalin has to back down. He's embarrassed enough. This Berlin blockade is a major turning point in the Cold War. April 1949, there's 12 nations set up something called the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. And NATO still operates today. NATO has troops in Afghanistan. And this was to make sure that the West could cooperate to prevent a Russian invasion. Now, because of that, in 1949, in 1955, Russia would respond by setting up the Warsaw Pact. Now, it's 6 years later. Why wait 6 years? Well, the reason is by 1955, France had eventually allowed Germany to start an army again. Now, France had understandably been quite nervous about the Germans having their own army again. But eventually had come to realise that if the Russians were to be kept out of Europe, Germany needed to have armed forces. And so when West Germany joined NATO in 1955 and started creating an army again, Russia needed to do something itself, and it created the Warsaw Pact. And all those nations that had taken over in West at Eastern Europe were now told, right, you're joining the Warsaw Pact, which is our equivalent. In 1949, the FRG, the Federal Republic of Germany, or West Germany, it's set up, and it's allied to the West. And in October then, the Russians called their side the German Democratic Republic. And that's East Germany. So Germany becomes split into West Germany and East Germany. East Germans would begin to do everything they possibly could to get into the West, because there was a better standard of living there. And this became more and more apparent as you begin to get into the 1960s. Better jobs in West Germany, better living in West Germany. And the best way to do that was to get into West Berlin. Because if you just would walk across into the western part of the city, you could then jump on a train and get into West Germany. And that would become a major embarrassment to the communists. If their system was so good, how come people were leaving all the time? And that would later lead to the Berlin Wall crisis in the 1960s, the early 1960s. And that would be on your Kennedy successes audio.